This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is America with Rich Valdez, powered by PolitiWeek.com.
And Rich Valdez is with us, former Christie administration official.
You worked for Chris Christie, you've been in politics, done a lot of public service stuff.
Rich Valdez, columnist now with the Washington Times.
This is America.
Richie V, you're on the air with the nation.
The nation.
This is America. With your host, Rich Valdez.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, Valdez with an S, at Rich Valdez on all of the social media. And check this out. There are these Venezuelan gangs, and it's really one big gang. It's a transnational organized crime syndicate known as El Tren de Aragua, and it comes from Venezuela. They've been in Bolivia. They've made their way throughout South and Central America. They're making their way into North America. And some of these guys are getting caught. Now, I was scrolling through social media, and I saw one of these guys. He was singing a song, and he was basically taunting Americans, saying, look, you know, you guys have to pay taxes because you're supporting us, because you owe us, and this and that. And I thought that was silly, but, you know, whatever. But then I saw this clip, and I'm going to play it for you right now. But this one was really eye-opening. Why? Because this guy, he says that you owe him. And he's using communist revolutionary platitudes like Che Guevara used, like Fidel Castro used. This is very concerning to me because Venezuela is a communist country. And who wants commies from Venezuela coming here thinking that we owe them something, some sort of reparations? And that's exactly what they're thinking. Now, I'm going to play a clip for you. This clip is in Spanish. I'm going to give you the translation and reaction as best as I can so that you get the context of it. But this guy is legitimately taunting you, me, and every other American. Listen to this.
No se salgan de los refugios para darle el gusto a un huele boxer que no le va a dar ni siquiera un dólar para que se coman una...
Hold it right there. He says, don't leave the refugee camps or these migrant shelters. Don't leave them because you're going to give satisfaction to some boxer-sniffing fool, you, me, anybody else in America, that would not even feed you. And this is, of course, again, this is a very contemptuous video. This guy's like, you know, F you, F you, F you, you owe me. Let it play.
Hamburguesa. Quédense en los refugios hasta que ustedes estén preparados para enfrentar a este duro sistema de United States.
Hold it right there. He said, you stay in that shelter until you feel that you are ready and prepared to take on this system known as United States. What does that sound like to you? That doesn't sound like he's looking for the American dream. That doesn't sound like he's here trying to feed his family. No, that sounds like he's trying to take over this country. He said, you stay in that migrant shelter as long as you need to stay. Forget these boxer-sniffing idiots that wouldn't even give you a hamburger. You stay there as long as you need to until you're ready to square off with them. Go ahead.
Recuerden que hay programas que los respaldan, que los ayudan y no van a permitir que ustedes duerman en la calle.
There's programs that are going to help you. There's programs that are going to feed you. They're going to house you. And this country will not allow you to sleep in the street.
Único beneficio que les digo son de las casas que podemos invadir o no invadir, expropiar para que
suene. Hold it right there. Now, listen to this. He says, what really matters here, the only thing, is the houses that we can invade. Hold on. Let me not say invade. Let me say expropriate. That's literally what he says. He said, and he's doing it tongue in cheek because he's talking about invading people's homes. That's what he's talking about. Does that make it legit? Does it make it real? Does it make it a thing? All I know is this fool is on social media preaching up a storm like a communist revolutionary would could be propaganda for all I know. But it is shocking to me that we have this young Venezuelan guy, and this guy's, I don't know, 20 years old, maybe 21, telling people, stay in the shelter, forget these he's insulting the Americans, calling us boxer sniffers, which I think is kind of funny, but not funny. And he talks about invading homes. Go ahead.
Bonito. Pero mientras tanto, muchachos, no se salgan de los refugios, ya que eso es una obligación del gobierno americano.
Hold on right there. He says, I'm saying expropriate rather than invade because it sounds nicer, prettier. But stay in those shelters because this is the obligation of the American government.
Darnos casa, vivienda, y darnos una estabilidad, porque no vinimos.
That it is the obligation of the United States to give us homes, to give us housing, to give us somewhere to live. This is their responsibility.
De Venezuela, reprimido, para que aquí el racismo hispano nos ataque como nos está atacando.
Hold up. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. He says, because we're being attacked by Hispanic racism. I guess he's talking about me because he's using a leftist tactic, right? When the left feels attacked because they're wrong, right away they'll say, oh, it's because you're racist. So when it's other people that waited in line, legal immigrants that did things the right way and don't appreciate illegal immigrants, they're turning around saying, well, you're a racist. You're a racist and you're a Hispanic racist. So I'm a Hispanic racist. Anybody who's Hispanic that doesn't support illegal immigration, you know, again, it's this catch-22. And, I mean, there's a lot of old tricks in the book, and this is one of them. This is one of those tricks where you try to get people to, you know, to back off by saying, oh, come on, how could you be a real Hispanic and not support this? Real simple. Nobody wants their kid raped. I don't care if I'm white, black, Hispanic, Chinese, you name it. I have a kid the same age as Lakin Riley, God bless her soul. Absolutely not. Not interested in an invasion from anybody, from any country. You stay in your lane, stay in your country. Go ahead.
Más que todos nuestros mismos compatriotas. Dile no al racismo hispano, al racismo latinoamericano, y al racismo.
He's screaming and he's shouting that you have to say no to the Hispanic racism, say no to Latin American racism. We have to say no to racism from our compatriots, from our fellow Latinos and Hispanics. We have to say no. That was it. And let me tell you, this guy is a joke. This guy is a trained Marxist. That is training right there, whether he knows it or not. He's right in line with the Marxist manifesto, right? The Communist Manifesto is what they do. He's using the Mau Mau tactics that the CIA used. Blaming other people, bird dogging. You got to know this stuff because you have to be able to point it out. When they start saying, oh, because the imperialists, the revolutionaries are here for the people, you know, this is what it is. They're going to stick up for workers, right? That's the whole, oh, the worker. I've seen this stuff before. I'm not interested. Unbelievable. Anyway, these Venezuelan gangs, this transnational criminal syndicate from Venezuela is called El Tren de Aragua, and it is massive. It's a big, very fast growing gang, big network of people. And there's an expert on this, a guy named Joseph Heumeier, who has really got his finger on the pulse of this stuff. And I sat down with him and had a conversation. I'm going to play you some of that audio when we come back. Don't go anywhere. I'm Rich Valdez.
This is America. This is America. He's making podcasting great again. This is America with Rich Valdez.
Welcome back, familia. Check this out, amigos. So the El Tren de Aragua, that's what it's called, El Tren de Aragua, Venezuelan gang. There's a report that I want you to hear. Check this out.
The fastest growing transnational criminal organization known as the Tren de Aragua is a Venezuelan gang that has now infiltrated its way into the United States through various sectors of the U.S.-Mexico border.
That here in El Paso, tren de Arawa, gang members who are identified are put into prosecution pathways for 1325 illegal entry into the United States.
According to a CNN report from Border Patrol, 38 suspected members from the Tren de Aragua have been arrested between 2022 and 2023.
When they come to a new place, they do it oftentimes through immigrant pathways, taking advantage of people from within their own community.
Tren de Aragua is taking advantage of the mass Venezuelan exodus to make their way into the country, and now they are ramping up crime in U.S. cities like Miami and Chicago.
All right, that's Arana Bataro, who's giving that report from KTSM. And I wanted to bring in somebody who understands this stuff, who's been following this this is what he does. And Joseph Heumeier, he's the executive director of the Secure Free Society. And the Center for a Secure Free Society, they dedicate themselves to understanding this stuff. He says this a lot better than I do, so I want to bring him into the conversation. Joseph, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
You bet. So we're talking about El Tren de Aragua and what this is presenting to the United States at this time. Help us understand a little bit about the roots of this transnational criminal organization.
Yeah, this is interesting because this is, and as the report mentioned, this is the fastest growing transnational criminal organization in the world. You know, about 6 years ago, they had a presence in only two countries, their home base, Venezuela, and then their neighbor, Colombia. And now they have a presence in 10 countries in the Western Hemisphere, including the United States. And their origin obviously goes back to Venezuela. And this goes all the way back to 20 plus years ago, when they had basically unions inside some of these syndicates inside the country that would be protesting, and then they end up be getting involved in corruption. And so that's what these infamous trains are about, because there were unions that were protesting outside this train network that's inside the country. But that's almost irrelevant at this point, because they really took an inflection point in 2007. In 2007, the Minister of Interior of Venezuela at the time, a gentleman named Tarek El Aissami, who's a Syrian Lebanese Venezuelan, he created this system. He reformed the penal code of Venezuela, and he created a system called the Pranatos. The Pranatos is basically turning over the prison to the prisoners by creating a network of gang leaders that would run the order of the prisons. It sounds ridiculous, but it was a way to cut costs inside Venezuela, and probably had some more nefarious purposes in the long run. By 2011, the Venezuelan government created something called the Ministry of Penitentiary, Ministry of Prisons. And with this Ministry of Prisons, they basically did prison transfers and consolidated a lot of the Pranato leaders, which are called the Pranes, into a specific prison in the state of Aragua. It's a state in the northern part on the Caribbean coast of Venezuela. And so essentially, Hugo Chavez, the former and deceased leader, president of Venezuela, now Nicolas Maduro, who was then vice president, now president of Venezuela, they created the conditions in terms of consolidating the prison network inside Venezuela to empower the Tren de Aragua. Because the Tren de Aragua gets empowered by the inter-prison transfer of the Pranatos, of the Pranes from the Pranatos. And then in 2020, fast forward several years, when COVID hits, they start to shut down these prisons. And as they shut down these prisons, they start to release the prisoners. And then we get the expansion of the Tren de Aragua. Now, the Tren de Aragua already started expanding through the migration pathways of the Venezuelans, but that was mostly happening in South America. They don't really start hitting North America until 2021, a little bit in 2020, and then mostly in 2021. And the logistics that allowed them to move north was two things, again, by the Venezuelan government creating those infrastructure. One is an air bridge to Mexico through the national state-owned airline of Venezuela, Conviasa, who was sanctioned by then the U.S. government, would fly more flights into Mexico than to any other source destination in the world. And obviously a lot of that was to shuttle the migrants. And then the second was the existing Venezuelan migrant pathway through Colombia was then steered towards the Darien Gap, a once uncrossable border crossing between in the jungles between Colombia and Panama, which has now become basically a bridge between Colombia and Panama by financing NGOs that developed the that pathway. So they built the land bridge to the Darien Gap, an air bridge into Mexico, and that's why 2021 we saw the numbers of Venezuelan nationals creep up to the numbers that they are today, and the chain that I will follow right behind.
Now, Joseph Heumeier, from SFS, let me ask you this question. And you were clear. I just want to make sure for the sake of the audience. This grew and got the potency that it has because they had a presence in the jails, and the government in Venezuela decided to hand over the prisons to the inmates by allowing them to choose who they wanted to be the warden.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what it's called, a PRAN. That's exactly what they did in Venezuela.
All right, Joseph Heumeier, hang on right there, because obviously the inmates have taken over the asylum. Folks are coming right back with Joseph Heumeier. Don't move a muscle.
This is America.
The 45th president, Donald Trump, thinks it's an honor to speak with Rich Valdez.
Oh, very good, Mr. Goldscreener.
Yeah. It's an honor. Thanks, Rich.
The honor is all yours. Conservative talk with a dash of sofrito. Now, here's Rich Valdez.
All right, America, welcome back, familia. We're on with Joseph Heumeier. And Joseph Heumeier, this evil gang, the Tren de Aragua, coming from Venezuela, find it interesting that they're independent operators. Tell us how they are working together with some of our worst enemies, Russia, China, Iran.
So in some ways, they do work with a lot of these other organized crime elements, probably most notably the Gulf Cartel in Colombia, because that's the main pathway into the Darien Gap. But I'd say they're less competition to those other cartels because they don't really dabble as much in drug trafficking. They're not known to be too much of narco traffickers. Their expertise, their specialization is in human smuggling. They actually smuggle migrants. That's where their comparative advantage lies, and particularly human smuggling related to Venezuelan migrants. And that's the largest mass migration in the world. Upwards of 8 million Venezuelans have fled that country since 2014. So that gives them a comparative advantage to be able to work with the other cartels that are also involved in human smuggling and human trafficking, but without having to step on any turf that has to do with drugs or narcotics. So that's one of the angles I think that allowed them to expand so quickly, because they're not really competing on the drug markets, which oftentimes would create competition, which in the case of drug trafficking leads to violence. The other side of this is, and this is I think the big point, is you really don't get that kind of expansion without some type of state support. And in this case, at least indirectly, you do find state support from the Venezuelan government, and I'll explain that. Because the way the human smuggling operations work from Venezuela all the way through Central America into Mexico and even throughout South America is it begins by the basically human smuggling facilitators that work with the Tren de Aragua, which are many times the smugglers, work with travel agencies that provide the packaging, transportation companies, which are state-owned like airlines, Conviasa, and others, and the immigration agency, which oftentimes provides the visas or the documentation necessary to get to some of the primary countries. And so that is basically an organized crime racket where the Tren de Aragua is at the center of it because they're the smugglers, but they work within a larger industry and a bigger network. Human smuggling and its twin cousin, human trafficking, which is sex trafficking, is basically come to become a bonanza of a booming industry that it rivals drug trafficking to the point that even, you know, the infamous Mexican cartels have diversified the revenue streams to focus as much on human smuggling, human trafficking as they do on narcotics.
Wow. This is an interesting thing. Now, how did this organized crime enterprise, El Tren de Aragua, how did they get involved in human smuggling, human trafficking if they were primarily in charge of a prison?
But mostly because the Venezuelan migrants, because they were able to, their main sources of revenue when they were in the prisons was extortion, was basically would charge taxes to prisoners and their families. And so they were like an organized crime racket that would extort the prisoners and their family networks. But when the migrants started to push abroad and then the Trinidad Agua followed afterward, they had an innate understanding of how these communities were formed. And they're kind of organic in some ways because the massive amounts of Venezuelans that went into Colombia, then Ecuador, then Peru, then Chile, it's all kind of like every diaspora works with, family members, tells another family member, like move to this neighborhood. And the Trinidad Agua understood how to follow that. And so they continued their extortion racket that they were doing inside Venezuela through the prisons into the neighboring countries, into like basically these Venezuelan communities. And then they just figured out that there's a big business that has to do with human smuggling and they can make a lot more money than extortion. And then they morphed into that. And then now into all kinds of other illicit activities. They do prostitution. They do retail theft. In Bogota, there was a huge problem with the stealing of iPhones because apparently the Trinidad Agua figured out a way to unlock iPhones. I don't know how they did that, but they did it. And so they were on a shopping spree stealing iPhones all throughout Bogota. They're huge into prostitution. They have a huge prostitution ring in Lima, Peru. But more recently, we started to really see their capabilities escalate when they were able to assault and attack police officers. In Chile, there are cases of the Trinidad Agua kidnapping and killing police officers. And that's where really things started to get to the limelight of the South American authorities. But now that we're starting to see the beginning of that here in the United States, don't be surprised if you start seeing Trinidad Agua kill and kidnap police officers here in the United States as well, because they've already proven that they can do that.
And it's part of their MO. Now, I'm looking at a report from coming out of the UK, Daily Mail, and it says that Venezuelan authorities have announced they've freed at least 100 prisoners since Friday. And I find this interesting because they're considering more inmate review cases to let more people out. This seems to me like a direct middle finger to the United States and anybody else who's receiving these migrants. And it seems to be that these gang members are all coming to the United States. Am I right?
You're right. And so let me back up a little bit, because I think for the audience to really kind of get a sense of the scope here, I think, when we talk about Trinidad Agua, yes, they're a criminal organization. Yes, they're fast growing. They're present in all these countries. But I think the big impetus of all this is really to make sure people understand that they wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for the Venezuelan government. I mean, much the way that I think Iran supports Hezbollah and has as a proxy in the world of terrorism, the Trinidad Agua is probably and most likely a state-sponsored transnational criminal organization. That's how they've been able to get capabilities so quickly and become so powerful and so fast. And in that, anything that Venezuela does, whether it's releasing prisoners from prisons in Venezuela or, creating these transportation networks, whatever they do, it's strategic. It's meant to weaponize migration. It's meant to use migration as a maximum pressure campaign against the United States. They can't sanction us. They can't politically isolate us. But what they can do is they can flood us with drugs, with migrants, and terrorists. And that's exactly what they're doing. So this is, in many ways, asymmetric warfare on behalf of Nicolas Maduro and his international allies, which is Iran, Russia, China, the main adversaries of the United States. So they figured this out. They figured this out. And I draw emphasis again, whether it's the Central American caravans, whether it's the Haitian migration, or now the massive Venezuelan migration, you can draw links of all those waves of mass migration to the Maduro regime. And so they've basically figured out how to weaponize migration and using it to help collapse the U.S. southern border.
All right, and we're going to take a quick pause right there with Joseph Heumeier. We're coming right back. Don't go anywhere.
This is America. This is America. He's brown, he's bald, and he's breaking it down.
Oh, he's so handsome. What's his name?
Rich Valdez.
All right, amigos, welcome back, familia, and we continue our conversation with Joseph Heumeier. Now, Joseph Heumeier, I see that you got your degree at George Mason University. You served in the United States Marine Corps. How did your experience translate into becoming an expert on a transnational organized crime syndicate from Venezuela?
Yeah, you're right. My background, I was in the Marine Corps, but that was mostly my deployments were to the Middle East, as can be expected. That was in the early 2000s. And so what it did help me that period of time was help me understand the Middle Eastern threat networks, right? Because I was looking at Iran, Hezbollah that were in Iraq. Well, Hezbollah, no, but Iran had a heavy presence in southern Iraq, which is Shia controlled, Shia populated. And then, obviously George Mason had studied economics, so that really didn't have much to do with it. But what eventually it did, and this is, I guess, the real bridge, is I became interested in Middle Eastern threat networks, but I wanted to see how they were affecting globally. I wasn't so much interested in how they're doing in the region, in Middle East.
Right.
And what I came to find out is that, you know, many of the countries in Latin America have a heavy intrusion of these Middle Eastern threat networks, most notably Hezbollah, but not only Hezbollah, and that they're much more powerful than people think. They're involved in the narcotics trade. They're involved in human smuggling. They're involved in contraband. But they're also involved in political operations to help build political networks on behalf of Iran. And so let's look at Venezuela, for example. And I'm going to give you a data point that might, you know, surprise a lot of your listeners. But essentially, you know, there are more Venezuelan nationals in Syria than there are in Brazil. Right.
Wow.
So there's 350,000 Venezuelans that live in Syria, and there's 270,000 that live in Brazil. Why is that? Because over time, there's been a network that's developed from migration that happened 100 years ago from the Middle East to Venezuela. Then, you know, now went back to Syria when the, you know, Chavez years came up, and essentially that developed an immigration network that got used by terrorist networks, most notably Hezbollah. And so what that really started to illuminate in my mind was how complex these threats are in Latin America, because people look at them, they think it's just cartels, it's just criminal organizations. But in reality, they're threat networks that converge between drug trafficking, international terrorism, arms proliferation, human smuggling. But at the highest level, they're criminalized states, Venezuela, Iran, Syria, Russia, that are empowering these networks and using them as a sort of an asymmetric weapon against the West. So that's kind of how it led into it. It led by starting in the Middle East, and it kind of just brought me to Latin America. And people don't get this, but Venezuela is largely controlled by Iran and Hezbollah, more than Cuba, more than Russia, more than any other power that's in the country.
Wow. I didn't realize that influence was that deep. Now, if that is the case, how do... It's my opinion, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, that the United States has never had, other than maybe Reagan, has had very little interest in eliminating threats in Latin America. Chavez, Maduro, it's kind of like they bark and we say a few things and, you know, maybe there's some policy stuff, but nothing really happens. Same with Castro, right? There's a lot of talk, but nothing really happens. And I think they're used to that, and that's why they, as long as they know that they can exist and do what they do, they don't care. So what would it take for intervention to happen of the United States to, you know, I guess, neutralize the threat that's posed by Venezuela, if there is such a threat? And B, do you think that would ever happen?
Okay, so two things. The first, you're absolutely right. We haven't had a strategy for Latin America for a long time. Arguably, the Cold War under President Reagan, but that was mostly Central America, and it was about fighting the Soviet Union's containment strategy.
Right.
Maybe go back to Kennedy and the Alliance for Progress. He had some stuff, but in the 21st century, we completely abandoned Latin America, which doesn't make any sense. But it's what we did. We pivoted to the Middle East, and then we looked at Asia, and essentially we left a vacuum. And that vacuum, as vacuums tend to do, became filled. It became filled by the adversaries, the United States. Iran, Russia, China started to become more prominent inside the region. But then the kind of moving over to the second part of your question, which is like, you know, how has this affected it and what can we do about it? So, you know, this begins with, I think, you know, everything that we're seeing, whether it's the Tren de Aragua from Venezuela, the crisis on the southern border, the calamity that is Venezuela and Cuba, Nicaragua, and those countries, these are all symptoms of the failures of U.S. foreign policy. Our negligence of Latin America is coming home to roost, and it's first happening on our southern border. So naturally, what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to rebuild the community. We can't just wait for this to fix it on its own, because it's going to affect us directly. So we're going to actually have a strategy for Latin America. We're going to have to reassert the United States as a prominent partner in Latin America. We're going to have to isolate and block China, who's quickly becoming the preference of the partner preference for many Latin American countries. And we're going to have to squeeze out the criminalized regimes that are occupying in Venezuela, Nicaragua, and other countries throughout the region. That's going to require political will. You know, President Trump was the first president that actually made an effort to actually isolate the Venezuelan regime. Just like they did with Iran, they had a maximum pressure campaign against Nicolas Maduro and his government. The problem was, it wasn't the policy. The policy was a good policy. The problem was the diagnosis. because at the time when President Trump wanted to do something about Venezuela, the U.S. government had no understanding of the problem. The U.S. government had not been focused on Venezuela. They had not been analyzing Venezuela. So the options were very limited. Now we know a lot more. And now we would know exactly what are the pressure points and how to do that. But the thing about Venezuela is you can't think of it like a normal country. It's not Switzerland. Venezuela is a network. It doesn't function like a government. It functions like a network. And the big powers of that network aren't inside Venezuela. They're in countries like Brazil, in Colombia, in Mexico, or even far afield in Syria. So to go after the network, you got to build a network. So I'll kind of, you know, my final point on that would be to say, we're going to have to build an alliance throughout Latin America that's going to allow us to isolate these threats and contain these criminalized governments. For example, I think one of the biggest opportunities that we have right now is in Argentina, the government of President Javier Milei. Exactly, Javier Milei. I mean, just, you know, a few months ago, that government was antagonistic to the United States, was very cozy with Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro. Now, Ben Maduro just closed his airspace to Argentina because he's upset about a plane that was piloted by IRGC pilots and was detained in Argentina, and they seized it and sent it to the United States, and we destroyed it. So now Maduro's up in arms. That means that, you know, anything that pisses off Maduro is probably a good thing, and that's what Javier Milei is doing. So we have the tremendous opportunity to build a partnership with a major country. This is not like a small country. This is once the wealthiest country in Latin America, Argentina, and that's how you begin. We lost an opportunity with Brazil with President Bolsonaro, but we could regain it with Argentina. We have elections in Mexico this year, and we're just going to have to go one by one.
Outstanding. Joseph Heumeier, I want to thank you for joining us and bringing us up to speed on this stuff. This is something I think not a lot of people know about, and if there's one thing I like to do is make sure I tell people what's going on. If I know something, I want to share it with you. And if I can't say it well, I'll find somebody who can say it well, and you've said it extraordinarily well. So thank you, sir. And folks, I want to remind you, as Americans, we have to really, we're in this together, right? This is our children's country as we leave it to them. This is their inheritance. And this is why I always say at the end of the podcast, you have to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. And the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people like you to sit there and do nothing. Now's the time to do something because America needs you more right now than she's ever needed you before. Make sure you're checking out the radio show during the week on richvaldez.com. You can find out where it is locally listed in your area. Make sure you're subscribed to this podcast and as well the podcast for America at Night with Rich Valdez. And hasta la próxima. Until the next time, God bless you, America. I am Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.